once again to Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola, the podcast. A podcast on the Amazon television series Fallout. We are doing a weekly discussion of each episode of the series. Though it was dropped all at once, we decided to watch one episode a week and do a podcast on each episode. Today is May 28th, 2024, that we are recording this, and we will have this released on May 30th, Thursday. Today is Tuesday. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
And in the state of Missouri?
Hello, everyone. This is Kevin. I am doing all right. I hope you are as well.
Indeed. And in the the Canadian province of Alberta, Canada?
It's Sean, everybody. I hope all my American friends had a good Memorial Day-long weekend.
Indeed, indeed. So,
you have one coming up, don't you?
We had Victoria Day last weekend.
What's Victoria Day?
It's our long weekend for May. Before yours.
Oh, you have like Armed Forces Day coming up, don't you?
No, we have Remembrance Day November, which is November 11th. We don't have multiple military days though, like you guys, for holidays.
Right. Well, yeah. One is
not as jingoistic.
All right.
One is for all veterans, and one is for those who've passed. What is Victoria Day?
Victoria Day is in honor of Queen Victoria. So it's it's our long weekend for May.
Gotcha.
So
subjects of the Empire must submit.
All right. So
actually in the Sherlock Holmes group, one of the Sherlock Holmes groups I'm a part of, we do a toast to Her Majesty Queen Victoria at the start of every meeting.
Well, there you go.
God save the Queen.
So who are we? We are part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. It is a website that has serious speaking. It is a website that has a bunch of news and podcasts. Basically, all the podcasts on the network are there, including multiple podcasts that your co-hosts that you hear on this podcast do as well. We do have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com where you can email us and put in DDP in the – well, actually put in Nuka Cola or Fallout in the subject line and then whatever else you want to discuss in the subject line. And then we will read your email on this podcast here. The reason you put Fallout or Nuka Cola or Nuka Girl in the subject is so we know it's specifically for this podcast and not one of the other podcasts on the network. We do – have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group where you can join in the conversation on anything genre related. And besides that, you can find the podcast Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola on two different feeds. The first feed is Nuka Girl Drinks Nuka Cola podcast feed, which can be found on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are found. And you can also find this podcast on Dark Discussions podcast feed, which also can be found wherever podcasts are found. And the second feed that I just named includes not only this podcast, but all the other podcasts that your co-hosts participate in. You can get the podcast on darkdiscussions.com, the website. And besides that, Sean, what else can people find on www.darkdiscussions.com?
You can also find the link for Patreon, and which is a way that people can support their favorite creators. So just click on the link. It'll take you to Patreon, and it's a way for you to financially support the creators that you enjoy. So in this case, our podcast for Dark Discussions across the board is released free to all the different podcast providers. But there's a ton of expenses behind the scenes to keep everything going. So anything that you're able to financially donate, we truly appreciate and thank you for. Even a dollar a month makes a difference for us. But for every $5 a month that you're able to donate, you will then get to pick a movie that will go into a draw every quarter, where if it is picked, it will then be done as a review either on the Dark Discussions main feed or one of the sister podcasts, depending on where it falls genre-wise and all that other good stuff. For the people who, as we understand, these are tough financial times, if you are not able to financially support us, you can still help us by sharing the podcast on social media, as well as doing the rating and reviewing our podcast on any of the providers that you're downloading from, because all of that stuff helps us in regards to keep going, as well as just your support and listening to us. And thank you for being here with us, at least with the Dark Discussions big feed since 2011. So thank you for giving us a chance to be here for over a decade, and for some of us like being able to join in along the way and be part of this fun. So we just thank you for any support you're able to provide, and just thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
Indeed, indeed. And I finally changed the website header photo, because before Barrett mentioned and noticed that it said 10-year anniversary. And we're actually 14 years. So I changed it to Dark Discussions News Network Established 2011.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah, it looks good. I thought it looked really good, Phil.
Good work, guys.
Yeah, yeah, thanks, Bert. Yeah, so I got that up and put it as the header photo on the website, as well as the Facebook group. All right, so oh, and thanks, Sean. I guess we can discuss a little bit about Fallout, and basically tonight we're going to discuss episode 7 of the television series entitled The Radio, directed by two folk, Frederick
Penultimate
E.O. Yep. Toy and Claire Kilner, and written by Chaz Hawkins, and most certainly the penultimate episode, as Barrett just said. So let's get into our opinions on this episode. So let's start with you, Michael.
Yeah. Not to be a broken record, but it's another good episode. And I think it does a really good job of sort of amping up stakes, especially sort of at the end. See, because they had this thing where there's been building a mystery, and they have the character walking into the solution of the mystery a full episode before the end of the season, so you can find out what's going to happen, as opposed to, you know, just waiting 2 years to get to that point, and then waiting for a whole other season. You know, which unfortunately a lot of shows just want to drag everything out even more than necessary. Other than the fact that they gave us an episode off without Norm, I don't think anything's felt like dragged out, like there's been any time wasted. I just thought this was just another, again, solid entry in building up the narrative. A lot of new things. We got the dog coming back. Some more fun side characters. Just everything they've been doing, they continue to do well. That's, we'll get into more details, but that's really all I have to say. And you should be watching this.
All right. Sounds good. Kevin, what do you got?
Pretty much what Mike said. I really just am impressed on how well that they keep the story going. I'm impressed with the acting. I'm impressed with just the scenes and how they all are tying in very well. It's one more good episode.
All right. Sounds good. Sean, what do you got?
Yeah. Another great episode so far for me. It's 7 for 7. Another great episode, building the tension, keeping the stories going, pacing, everything is good. I thought it was cool having another, like, surprise guest star person in Fred Armisen in his role today in the episode. And sort of as an aside, I was trying to figure out where the actress who played Betty, or who plays Betty, was, like, where I'd seen her from. And then I realized that she's Blind Deadpool. Al in Deadpool.
Deadpool.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Damn. That's awesome. So, but yeah, no, the episode was just, I really loved where they're taking it and where like they're building to for the season finale. And I think there isn't any like question of pacing or anything like that. Just another, just very, very enjoyable episode.
Yeah. Speaking of, guest stars, I mean, we have, if you, you know, from the '80s, I'm sure, some of us remember.
Estrada.
Yeah.
That was great.
I was weeping a little inside for Mr. Estrada. Sean didn't recognize him as a special guest star.
All right, well, we'll get into all that after everybody gives their thoughts. So, Barrett, what do you got?
Sorry.
I really like this episode. I thought it was really good. Again, like Sean said, 7 for 7. It just is really well-crafted story. It's sometimes lighthearted. It's always somewhat serious. But it's just a great show. It doesn't let you down at all, at least so far.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, for me, thought this was a great episode as well. It had its, went back to some of its grindhouse, feel from some of the earlier episodes, like episode 2 and 3, while having, pretty good, suspenseful drama in other parts, or thrower moments if you prefer. So yeah, another solid episode in a series that's now 7 for 7, in episodes that are, big thumbs up. All right. So, that's our opinion on this episode here, the radio. So it appears that, we all, enjoyed this one as much as the rest, and probably all equally. So what we do here on Nuka Girl Says Drink Nuka Cola podcast, basically we say what we do is we talk about everything and anything about this episode, and what we feel and thought and whatnot, because we're assuming everybody here who's listening has already seen the show and episode, and you're here for the after hours discussion of the episode by other folk, and that's what we're here to do. So we can talk about everything and anything. So where do we want to go? Who do we want to start? Who wants to start? Anyone got anything? Anyone?
I'll start. There's a interesting bit. There's a little bit of a theme of heroes and villains in this. And maybe that's not the best term for it, but you have that conversation, between Moldaver and Cooper, where he says, you know, the thing is, a good bad guy doesn't know he's a bad guy. And at the same time, there's a converse to that, which is that a good hero doesn't necessarily know that they're the hero. And I think that was interesting, which he doesn't mention, but it sort of goes along with it, because not long after that, you have the scene with Titus basically giving himself up in order to let,
Maximus?
Maximus, sorry. doing that. Maximus
was giving himself up
and confessing and letting Lucy go, go back to the vault with the head, or go back off on her quest with the head, as he basically, you know, takes the fake head back to the Brotherhood, knowing that he's might never come back from that. And he's insisting while he's doing that he's not the hero. And at the same time, right, we had then this reveal about what was going on in the vault underground, in Vault 4. And that maybe where we left off last episode, assuming that they were the villains, and maybe not.
Big twist.
Yeah.
So
it was well done, though. Well done.
So this is, So this is kind of a thematic thing about maybe who you think is the hero and who you think is the villain, isn't necessarily the case. And, yeah, so I guess that means that we're going to find out next episode Lucy is really the evil mastermind behind it all.
Also, you mean Goosey? We found out that Lucy and Maximus like each other a lot. So yeah. She invites him back to her vault when this is all over. And
or some explosions.
He agrees. Yeah, yeah, right. and he agrees. But again, will he make it back because of his heading with the fake head back to the Brotherhood?
Only the contract knows for sure.
All right, so and then of course we have the Noam stuff too, and we have this information about Maldaver, thank you, who's actually Ms. Williams or Mrs. Yes. Williams, and so she, just like Cooper or the Ghoul, is still alive in the modern era, 200 and something years later. However, she's not a ghoul. And what all I can tell you is, based off of Fallout 4, the video game, that means she was cryogenically frozen and unfrozen, I guess. So that's the only way she could be alive today and not have aged or become a ghoul. Yeah. I mean, not age, because she'd be dead. You can't live 200 years unless you're a ghoul. So obviously there's some cryogenic thing going on, We'll probably learn some more information about that, I would assume, in next episode, hopefully, and not have to wait until season 2.
I thought the most shocking part of the episode, though, was that Stephanie somehow got to be the head of Vault 32.
That wasn't shocking. I said that was going to happen episodes ago.
I'll be sarcastic,
though. Okay. Sarcastic. Well, I think Barrett was the only one that didn't understand that it was sarcasm.
I had to pick it. I like the fact that if you watched her, you could see she knew, right?
Yes,
she definitely knew.
So this is all, and it's not subtle. It's very obvious to the audience. So it's not like I'm picking up on anything here. But yeah, I think we all knew this going in because they dropped that one bit early on that she's from Vault 31. But she had that cat that got the mouse look on her face. She was like the only one who said, her and Dave. Right, seem to be the only ones that were happy going into Vault 32. And I understand Chet, because he knew that all these people committed suicide and that something happened. So I understand him being kind of bummed out by it. I don't know why all the rest are necessarily bummed out by it.
Well, because they're going away from what they know.
Yeah.
They didn't get really a choice in it. They've just been chosen.
Yeah, because you're going to miss – you're gonna not be able to see your friends anymore, and so it's a move. Anytime you move,
if you're being chosen to go to a place that has more food and better, better stuff, maybe that's good. But everybody's dead. It was dead there. You know, it's like a haunted house at this point.
Yeah.
The interesting thing I don't think you just leave the fucking door open.
I don't know. And that's a good question. I wonder that too.
They would have twice the living space for the same number of people.
Yeah,
they would still be able to go back and forth.
I think they did it. I mean, maybe I misheard something, but I remember something earlier that they mentioned something about keeping everything, keeping people separate is just in case of diseases. Because if a disease hits. And
you want to contain it to one place.
But they were all part of the same group, so it wouldn't really matter if they kept it open now. Because everybody that was in that vault is dead now.
But I mean, the thing is, if a disease breaks, for example, they separate areas of Vault 31, 32, 33, they're all shut again. If a disease breaks out in 32 somehow, then Vault 31 is okay.
I'll tell you what it is in the video games is that once you cross over the gate that, the wheel with the little, that looks like a clock, that clock spoke that closes. Once you go past that, you're in common area, which is open to anybody, meaning raiders, bums, vagrants, ghouls, super mutants, anybody can walk through there because it's not protected. So that's why I think you can't just leave them open, because technically if anybody ever breaks into whatever building that their vault is in, they can then would be able to just walk into the vaults. So technically they could meet up once a week or whatever, but I don't think they could just leave it open if they wanted to be safe from outside influences. That's my understanding.
All right. It looked like it was a direct access to me, but that just could be editing.
Well, it depends on what direct access mean, right? They still both have the doors, right? The wheel doors. So there's got to be something between the two wheel doors, which would be a common area, right? And that common area is usually open to the whole world.
No, but I was saying it seemed like it was just walked straight into from one vault into the others. What I thought was going on. I could be wrong about that, though.
It did look that way, yeah.
It looked like there was a big – like it was like a – I would say – so you know how like a airlock kind of thing.
Yeah, a rolling metal door.
Yeah, and then you go down a long hallway and then you go to the next section. That's what I thought it was. The thing I thought was interesting was the non-menacing, non-ominous situation when the big guy with the glasses doesn't want to go, and he's like trying to because he wants to stay.
It was hilarious.
And like you have the guards just standing there and just that like this is not like the friendly, you know, and like people didn't know how to respond and just – it gave you more of that feeling that, like, again, there's, like, more to this than what is being seen in the, you know, the surface details.
Absolutely. Once they were chosen, they were going. They had
choice. You don't have a choice. You're done.
There's not enough questioning of authority and why things are done.
Well, I think that's probably why a lot of these people or their forebearers were probably chosen, was for their obedience.
But this is a new generation. Each generation is different.
They probably get more docile being underground.
Raised and what, there's also something to be said. You know, there's, speaking of America and our neighbors up north, there's something to be said for the fact that when the American Revolution was going on, some people decided they didn't want to rebel and they went north, and some people up north said they wanted the independence and they came down south. And you have some change in the character, whether that's a biological thing or an upbringing thing is kind of beside the point. But if you make a vault filled with people who are kind of passive and open suggestion, and good at following orders, be surprised when they raise kids that are the same way and have kids that are the same way, and you keep doing that for generation after generation, you'll get a very compliant clientele, you know. And we see that a lot with Lucy. It does make me wonder if how widespread this conspiracy is in terms of who knows, because I think it's clear that obviously, Betty is aware, and I'm going out on a limb and saying that Steph is aware. But, like, the guards, do the guards know? Or are the guards just following orders? Right?
They knew who was supposed to go and who wasn't, because...
Do they have an understanding of the larger mystery of what's going on?
Oh, I doubt it.
Are they on the inside in this, or are they just, again, doing their job? You know, which
I think
is
they're
doing,
just doing their job. That's my feeling. I feel there's not that many people that know what's going on. As far as the Vault 31 conspiracy, the Vault 31 people know, but I don't think everybody else knows.
Yeah, no, I go with that. It's a very need-to-know basis kind of thing.
It makes me wonder then, how are they going to respond if and when the truth comes out, either this season or next?
I don't know. The show is really good at end episode hooks, so I'm wondering what its end season hook is going to be, because they do really good hooks.
And I like that it's not a false tension either.
But I still see what you're saying, Mike, but it's it's weird that, especially now that the leadership is in flux, that there isn't enough people that speak up. I mean, it's possible that, you know, they're all sheep, but it's a little hard to believe for me, just at least for me. I mean, I'm,
well, then there's the aspect
well,
too.
Well, so that far, all, I mean, well, so far, right? So far, I think they're sheep. I mean, there's the one scene actually where, I'm sorry, the younger brother's name. I keep on forgetting it.
Norm.
Norm looks at Chet and looks right and says, "You're a coward." And he pretty much said, "Aren't we all?"
Yeah, that's why we're in the vault.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also, well, I think he also understands more. Chet understands there's more. I mean, he's seen the evidence, so he knows that there's something more than what meets the eye, but he also realizes that he doesn't want to rock the boat. If he rocks the boat, even with one eye, he has a very good looking girlfriend. He has a comfortable life. He's now, even though he's moving and he's going to be, you know, leaving a lot of the people he knew, he is still in a very good situation.
He's like Joe Pantoliano's character in The Matrix, who knows the truth, but would rather go back to the system.
That's an interesting analogy.
Not as violent, of course, but the idea.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think Chet knows that there's more to what's going on. Where the guy in the Matrix knew all about the Matrix. This, you know, Chet doesn't know enough. And I think that's just his point, is he doesn't want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want, he's like, he says, yes, there is more than what's going on. I've seen it. I don't want to know more. I would rather just conform, be a sheep, be comfortable. And that's the extent of it.
And there's a weird, I don't know if it's an intentional parallel between him and Cooper, right? Because he's now got, I don't know if she's his wife, but he's got a girlfriend with a child, even if it's not his child. And he's just happy with how things are and doesn't want to know what's really going on behind it. He knows there's more to it, but he doesn't care. And, you know, you've got Cooper, on the other hand, who's got his wife and child, and his wife is involved in shady business, and he doesn't really want to have anything to do with it. He doesn't want to know, you know, he's kind of caught. Does he want to spy on his wife? Does he want to know the truth? You know, or does he trust Moldaver or not? And so I think you're going to be interesting to see what goes on with Chet. And usually you don't, if you're following the standard tropes, you know, Chet will at some point have his kind of heroic moment, where he finally, decides, you know, he's had all he can stand and he can't stand no more. And he's gonna eat his spinach and step up and be a man at some point. And whether that happens this season or next, you know, I have no idea. But it's going to happen, I'm sure, at some point. Or he's going to end, or he's going to die tragically because he can't escape his fatal flaw.
It also depends on what the vault, whatever is happening with the vault, is it malevolent or not? So if Chet looks at it and compares it to, say, well, you know, in a real world situation, we'll say the leadership of Dubai or the United Arab Emirates, which is fairly decent, though they're a benevolent, they're still a monarchy, dictatorship or whatever. So it's benevolent monarchy or benevolent dictatorship. So that's the question. Is it a benevolent dictatorship that is running these three vaults, or is it evil? And at this point, before Noam goes into the third vault, they aren't quite sure if it's benevolent or not. And so Chet is, I don't know, maybe, I mean, the only thing that still makes me wonder is that all those dead bodies were cleaned up and they don't have an answer for it, except they know that Betty or someone had something to do with it. And that is weird that, you know, they did that without talking to people. So if Chet looks at it as non-malevolent, then I can see him just ignoring it and saying, you know, this is okay. So
I think this is getting back to the question of who's a hero, who's a villain. And the heroes don't see themselves as heroes, and the villains don't see themselves as villains. And I think Betty, I'm going out on a limb, we could argue she's the villain of the vault, or at least is being set up to be one. But I certainly don't think she thinks she's a villain. I'm sure she thinks she's doing things for the right reason or for the greater good, and these people just don't need to know.
I don't know. Based off of what we see in the third vault at the end, near the, you know, later in the episode, I may believe that whether or not she thinks she's doing right or whatever, she's evil. She would be considered evil.
That's the point, right? That the villain doesn't see themselves.
Right. A lot of sociopaths, you know, I'm sure Saddam Hussein didn't look at himself as the villain, right? I'm sure Putin doesn't look at himself as the villain. You know, you can go on and on and on. So.
You mean it's wrong to kill people?
Yes. Yes, it is. It most certainly is wrong to kill
people. Was he killing people? Or was Saddam Hussein killing people, or was he feeding his dogs?
That is a good question.
Anyway, so I would state that whether she believes it or not, she's still a villain.
All right, that's the point, though, right? A good bad guy doesn't know he's a bad guy.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And then that also opens up the question in my mind about Cooper, or if you prefer the ghoul, because it's talking about his modern incarnation. I don't think he thinks of himself as a hero, but I also don't know if he thinks of himself as a villain. And I don't know, like, what path is he on? And is he on my money is on that he's on a redemptive path, evidenced by the fact that he let the dog out.
Yeah. Right now he's a cynic.
By the way, thank God we finally got the answer to that question.
Yeah, right now he's a cynic, but I think he's changing a little bit.
He's kind of rediscovering some of it. But he also, you know, shot someone, but he didn't kill them in this episode, right?
Well, we don't know. That's just that. I mean, yeah, the guy got shot in the shoulder, but how long, I mean, will he last?
Right.
Well, they do have some crazy medicines.
They do have some crazy medicines from what we've seen.
Yeah, but you don't want to turn him into a ghoul.
Yeah. Is that really so bad?
Why aren't I dead? I like that.
which raises my question. So, like, we saw someone. What was his name? Change into the ghoul. Yeah, Thaddeus. Right, that was him.
Yep.
I'm still not convinced he's turning into a ghoul.
He is.
He told us.
Yeah, that's what they told him. But I was thinking he was turning into a super mutant, and that's going to be the first super mutant in I guess, season two when they appear. But I kind of look at them as
mutants in a way in this environment. They're affected, you know, they are created by radiation, right? So I kind of look at them as mutants as well.
Oh yeah, they're definitely a type of mutant. There's no doubt. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'll go with what you said, Mike. Since they specifically stated it in the episode, why did they state in the episode otherwise? So he's probably turning into a ghoul, but it still doesn't make sense that he survives certain injuries, because being a ghoul, at least in the game. You are you're hurt or you're dead. I mean, so this is weird. This is definitely out of the ordinary. When you get shot in the neck. Right, but when you get shot in the neck, that heals up. That was weird.
His flesh turns kind of deadish, though. It looked different.
Yeah, that's why they thought he was.
You know what it is? He probably still has that medicine in him.
Medicine is probably what turned him into a ghoul.
Well, we know that, but it's also probably keeping him alive from those type of injuries, because even as a ghoul, you die from those type of injuries. So the medicine must still be in his blood.
But again, let's remember that we saw Cooper, reattach a severed finger, a random severed finger. That started to work just fine. That's all. So there are some.
Well, Lucy got that too, though. Abilities.
Right.
Yeah, Lucy got that too.
But here's my question. So assuming he's a ghoul, because that's what they told us, assuming he's a ghoul, and they're playing fair with us, he didn't immediately turn into a zombie, right? He didn't get that ghoulish look. So the question is, how long does that process take? Because I'm wondering then, is that another possibility then for Moldaver? What if she's just, a ghoul that's managed to stay out of the sun for a while and keep her girlish good looks?
It's very possible. I mean, anything's possible at this point. We don't have enough information.
Right. The only information I got is from the games. And based off the games, I would say Moldaver, or whatever her name is, was cryogenically frozen and is now free. And for this guy here, basically what you said, Mike, they said ghoul in the show, so we'll I'll go with that.
And so far they seem to have been consistent to being in sync with the game from pretty what close, we've seen. Yeah.
So that's the reason why I don't think Moldaver or whatever her name is a ghoul. So anything is possible.
Yeah, I don't know. It's because next episode's going to show us a few things, but it's still not, it's not going to answer. I mean, it may give us some conjecture, but she works essentially for that company. She said that.
That's correct.
Her company,
Vault-Tec.
Vault-Tec.
Vault-Tec bought them.
Right.
Vault-Tec bought the company she was in. Because
she had her cold fusion stuff.
Because she had her cold fusion stuff, right. And so she says some stuff about, hey, there's I can't remember how they essentially said it, but it was one of those, they bought out this whole thing, but now they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I honestly have a little bit of a problem with that because they have fusion cores. So unless fusion cores are not actually fusion, that's cold fusion because you're able to carry it around in your hands.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of magical thinking here, magical plot device stuff. But we've also got ghouls from radiation and
inconsistency or not, Mike. I think what happened was Vault-Tec bought her company, the company that she worked for, out to bury the technology.
To bury the tech. That's what it is. Right.
Yeah. That's what I would think. Yeah. Yeah. So Sean, you concur? That's probably what happened.
Oh yeah.
Says that's what happened. It's just, it just as a plot device, it feels a little weird to me because they already have the thing.
It's a science nerd. The world is a profit thing, right? Like she says that too, right? As part of her when she's talking to Coop. So.
Right.
Like she's aware that they benefit from having an end of the world scenario.
Right. Which makes no sense in my opinion.
It doesn't at all because I mean the less customers you have, the less money you have, right? I mean,
they gave a hint in a previous episode, but I don't want to spoil it.
Right, but either way, it still doesn't make any sense because it's like, why would you want to destroy your entire world?
But it's again expecting sociopaths to like to make sense with what their logic when they don't, right?
Yeah, but like, we're talking about a whole company. Can a whole company be sociopathic?
If you have enough people like within the system, that's the
– I don't know. I have a hard time.
It's the idea of banality of evil, right? Is that you don't have to be outright evil to be evil, right?
But there's a difference between destroying almost everything and being outright evil.
Well,
I don't know.
And what's the point of the company? Right. Yeah. The point of the company, for better or worse, right, the company's success is to be profitable. And if you're selling vaults, and it's way better to scare people about the upcoming war, so they keep spending money to prepare for it, then it didn't actually have the war and eliminate your entire customer base. So this is where I kind of start falling out a little bit with where the metaphor and the logic goes. Because this is not talking about like, William Randolph Hearst, you provide me the pictures, I'll give you the war. And where it's a war you can profit off of. The Vault Tech company doesn't seem to be there selling new suits of armor to the ghouls, and it doesn't seem to be making any sense whatsoever.
So then there must be another goal, is the question. Like, what is the actual goal then? Right?
Or did it just get out of their control? And it went further than they intended, and now these are the consequences.
They let the genie out of the bottle, right?
Right. Mm. Like, the threat of war maybe was important to them, but maybe not an actual war. But we don't know – we don't know enough show-wise about who started
it. All it takes is one crazy person to do that shit, though, excuse my language. Right? So you could have a company that is not evil – per se, but all it takes is one or a handful of people to cause chaos, right?
Right.
Look at Germany, some people like to watch the world burn, right?
Yeah.
There's no sense to it. It's just they like the chaos. Or it takes
people thinking that they know better than everybody else and this is the way things should be, and then starting something that just – again, goes further than they intended, but
that has never happened in the history of humanity. So I have no idea why you're thinking that way, Barry.
I got the sarcasm there.
There we go.
You were redeemed.
Normally it's obvious, but you weren't so obvious before, but I can blame it on muscle relaxants. I have a back problem right now and so I might not be getting your tone quite right.
No, it's okay. It's the Canadian in the tone, right? It's probably hard to deal with. I'm sorry about your back stuff, though. But anyways,
I'm going to pick on Baron and say, you're stupid. You didn't get it. No, honestly, that is
possible too.
No. back to the episode specifically. Fair to say that, all you need is one kook, and that's it. I mean, we've seen that in other movies where one person steals the vial of biological toxins and releases it in the world, and the world's over. What was that movie? 12 Monkeys? Or
12 Monkeys, yep.
Yeah. So
but that's
all you
like,
need is one kook.
But in that case, that's something like Moonraker, right, where Drax wants to restart the world for a vision of a better, more genetically perfect world with nothing but his little Aryan race that he's going to restate the world with. Or Thanos, right, which, so there are different motives than just beating your competition and turning a profit. So that's where I'm having a little trouble with understanding what exactly Vault-Tec's goals are, because we understand that if you can have just plain fanaticism, you can be like where your goal is just to beat, we're going to defeat the commies or something like that. But that doesn't seem to be what the case is here. It seems to be we want the company to outbeat its competitors, and it's nuclear war would certainly defeat the competitors, but it would defeat some other things too.
Right, like more money. money becomes irrelevant at that point. But maybe they're looking at Maybe they're looking at power more than they are looking at
maybe
money.
Right, but power is international conglomerates, not
necessarily.
Everything.
What if they want to be able to experiment however they want to experiment? And so this is their way of making the world accepting. Because before, you know, doing some of these experiments wouldn't be too well thought of. So, I mean,
I'll say this. If that is the case, if they go that far, then, you know, this is wacky B-movie rubbish, which is fine for this show. Because in reality, I don't think any company would honestly have a plan like that, because that mutual self-destruction, which is what they're doing. They're mutually self-destructing themselves and the world. They're no more relevant in this world than any other person.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know how relevant they are in this world.
In the video game, the Vol-Tec is irrelevant as anything else here, because they're just these little pockets around the country, and their vaults that have, what, 40 to 80 to 100 people at most in them.
Yeah, they seem like artifacts at this point, right?
Exactly. That's my point. So, yeah. they're
really big in France.
They're destroying themselves like fools. So it's over the top insanity rather than
kind of like the Umbrella Company, right?
Yes. Yeah, even worse than them, because the Umbrella Company wasn't necessarily planning to release the zombie virus, I don't think. That was just one kook. Here, it's actually what appears to be
the top echelon people.
Yeah, they all seem messed up, yeah.
Yeah, based off of Williams, what she says, it makes it sound like, yeah, that they're all nuts, the leadership.
Well, it reminds me a little bit like, ever see the movie The Kingsman?
Oh yeah. Yes.
Okay. The main bad guy, I mean, he wanted to pretty much kill a vast majority of the planet's
big percentage. Yeah.
A big percentage. And who are the people he saved, but were essentially the rich, you know, the rich, all that. Yeah. And it's,
yeah, James Bond villainy.
This is like Illuminati, like Georgia Guidestones kind of stuff, right? Where you limit the population to 500,000 people kind of stuff.
It makes me think of that Dan Brown most recent movie.
Oh, Angels and Demons?
Is it Angels and Demons? I can't remember
the name. With the plague.
Yeah, it has a plague in it. Yeah, similar idea.
I'm thinking of something else then. Well, anyway, I think they are looking for control, because they pretty much have the monopoly on vaults and all that. So as a result, there's no really more way they can do anything to make money. And they end up deciding to, I guess you could, you know, if there's, you know, with the nuclear war going on outside and everybody's dead, then they now have control over whoever's left.
Well, it's like a cabal, right? It's like basically you could have the company. But all it takes, again, is a handful of people at the top who decide their crazy plan is the plan to go with. And it doesn't matter what anybody else along the chain or in the chain or the system thinks, right? Because all it takes is a handful of them.
And an unanswered question is, who dropped the second nuke? All right, who destroyed Shady Sands?
Yeah.
And that hasn't been like a driving question in the series.
But it's one of the questions.
But it affects a lot of the people we've seen. Yeah.
But you know, it touches back on a lot of things, and it's sort of like the hub area, you know, to this world, if you want to go for a game kind of logic, right?
Yeah.
It's a common point, and everything's touching on it.
It's the sandbox.
Right. And it's a main feature of that sandbox. And it's figured so prominently for so many characters, but nobody's ever asked, well, who is the they? Who dropped that second bomb? And, you know, did Vol-Tec do it? Because it makes a little sense. Like, starting a whole war doesn't make sense. Ending the world wouldn't make sense. But if you're trying to sell Vol-Tec vaults, and you're trying to, and then dropping a bomb would certainly do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Because that's sort of like if you can imagine, I don't know, if let's say
it's
you
a
were
false
selling.
Flag, right?
Right. Yeah. If you were selling, you know, protective masks, you may not want to shut down the entire world, but having a little outbreak somewhere to get people nervous to buy more masks, that would make some sense.
Well, that kind of goes along with what I was saying, it going too far than what they wanted it to do.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. There's a couple interesting things because we see in this episode, you know, the same guy that was in the commercial, the guy with the family, the scientist, you know, we see him with doing his last entry. And even then, he seemed to kind of make into a bit of a show. It's like, this is going to be my last entry, and he's trying to, meanwhile his wife is in the background trying to barricade the door as best as she can. Here is like, will you please help, you know? And that's crazy, because and then we see that the monster with the fingers in the mouth come out and just destroy everybody.
The gulper.
But then he also talks about how great it is to have, you know, scientists as the head and as rulers and all that. And it's just, meanwhile, as he's saying this, we realize that because the scientists were the ones who were in charge of everything, that, you know, everything went crazy and, you know, the gulper came out and a lot of other people. And of course, then you get the one-eyed guy. That was like my uncle, like my great uncle.
Yeah, I think he said uncle.
Yeah, it was like that was his relative. Yeah, I think. Wow. Okay. But it was just because, I mean, with Lucy, I mean, you tell somebody don't look up there. You tell somebody, you know, what was it? You know, don't go up there. Of course, human curiosity, you're going to want to go up there. And not only that, but all they could have said was, don't go up there. It's a mess. It's dangerous. Nobody goes up there. And that's the extent of it. But no, they had to, you know, they just said, don't go up there.
Well, to be fair, he also needs a sharper sword.
Yeah, that's true.
That was so great.
I mean, just that whole thing, and then Maximus comes out. Yeah, Maximus comes out in the armor again, and he hits everybody. He says, "No, no, no, they're gonna let me go."
Oops. What?
Oops, sorry.
Somebody should look after that guy. And he pointed at the guy. Somebody should look after him.
And that was really, though, I will say that was kind of awesome that as she's being exiled, she's making the case for letting him stay. I thought that was neat.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch. Because really there was no reason he couldn't stay.
Because he didn't do anything.
Right.
Right. And especially that they're not evil. They're not evil. So why not? Why shouldn't he stay? Yeah.
Well, and their punishment is kind of harsh. I mean, like, she had no second chance at all. I mean,
yeah, but I love how they do it. You are banished to death. You're going to go to death. Well, however it was phrased, to death on the surface.
You will certainly die as soon as you reach the surface.
But the thing is, she's pretty much saying, but we wanted to go back to the surface anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
You know, and the funny part, one, she wanted to go back to the surface. Two, she was very apologetic about everything. She's like, I really didn't know. But then they're pretty much saying that, you know, all of the vaults are evil
they were all experimented on. So what was your experiment? And she looks at him with this, I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, if there was an experiment, maybe it was a leadership experiment. But the thing is that there was no biological experiment on anybody that we can tell.
That we know of, yeah.
That we know of. That's the trick.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's why they looked like, huh, you're being naive.
Yes.
That's the feeling I got from the look on their faces was, yes. Uh-huh, right. You keep telling yourself that. But there's an experiment.
She mentioned something about ignorance, right? You know, that she may not be aware of it, but it doesn't mean that she's not guilty.
I was just gonna say also, they didn't give her a second chance is because, and I don't think we find out, but the damage she did to the guy that she threw the acid on.
Well, threw the acid at.
Yeah, he's messed up.
Yeah, so that was pretty horrible. So even if it was what she thought was self-defense, so I can understand why they're not giving her the second chance.
Yeah, I get it.
But I mean, she watched a woman give birth essentially, and then be eaten alive.
Yeah, the movie. Yeah, the video.
Yeah, in that video. So I mean, she's trying to figure out what's going on. And so she sees all of that happen. And then they're trying to chase her down. And so she's, I don't know. As a independent viewer, I would almost sympathize with her fear and her reaction because she thinks, you know, you just.
Well, we agree.
You allowed a woman.
Yeah, we all agree with that.
Yeah, you
allowed a woman. We understand, but I'm talking about Kevin, the perspective of the vault leadership. We know something completely different more than they do.
Yeah.
All we know is that one of their good friends has been like all messed up.
Oh yeah, but at the same time, if you talk to, now, granted, you know, one vault is obviously different than another one, but I mean, they say, you know, you brought violence here, but if they could just sit there and listen to her and say, I was attacked after what I just saw. And I don't know, maybe I'm thinking still as a third, an observer rather than an actual participant. But I mean, I understand their point of view. At the same time, though, it is, I mean, the fact that they essentially let him go, that's, you know, that is better of them to do that. But at the same, it's interesting because, you know, they, like I said before, they're talking about the experiments that happened in all of the other vaults, and Vault 4 was evil and wicked, and they can easily see that she has no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
I did like how they gave her 2 weeks of supplies too.
And you don't have to carry it yourself. It'll be
great. Right. We'll help you get it out of the vault.
Well, again, it's that theme of who's the hero, who's the villain, that we were left off thinking one thing, and you know, these guys that we thought were the villains because they had some weird thing going on with the ceremony of the ashes and level 12, and it turns out that
they're heroes.
That Lucy is Michael Douglas in Falling Down, going, wait, I'm the bad guy.
Right.
Michael Douglas was not the bad guy in that movie.
Right.
Yeah, try being the worker in McDonald's.
That's their fault.
back to this, but the analogy is taken. It shows you that there was a misunderstanding.
Yep,
it's really
a very painful accident.
And in that in that situation and in that society and how things are in that world, it totally makes sense in how they deal with her. It's just, it's still harsh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, as Kevin said, since we're the third party watching, we know it's harsh. Because, you know, the NPC was the person that got the acid, who means nothing to any of us, or even the show for that matter.
He wasn't even a red shirt. We didn't even get any introduction before he exactly. got the acid in his face.
Right, right. And we didn't see him in the hospital afterwards. She visits him and sees him all.
We didn't get to say, like, I was one day away from retirement.
Yeah. Right, right.
Exactly. I was just about to get buried.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but you know, it I guess it is what it is. So they toss her, and that's the big twist. Is like, oh, they're actually good people; they're not evil. But you know, but the thing that still makes no sense to me, and it's never explained in this episode, is why were they worshiping Moldover earlier?
Right. See, that makes me wonder. I mean,
what's Moldover have to do with them?
Well, that's just it. Were they really the good guys or not? I mean, I'm not saying that they were the bad guys, but I'm not saying that they were exactly the, you know, the thing is that when you look at everybody in this, there really isn't someone that's like the definite good guy. I mean, maybe Lucy, just because she's just out trying to find her dad. You know, and she's running into all this and she's trying to settle things peacefully. And the only reason why that she didn't, you know, the only reason why she had this problem was, you know, she threw acid into a guy's face because that guy was attacking her.
I don't know if he was attacking her. He was going to get her the hell out of.
It was
a restricted area.
He was confronting her, certainly. Whether you want to say she was attacking, that's
a whole other issue. I wouldn't use that term because she was not supposed to be there. Therefore, she was trespassing.
Yeah, she broke the rules of the vault.
Yeah, believe me, if someone is trespassing in my house, I'm going to be hurting them for sure. I'm going to assault them for sure. So. It made sense that, and I don't think he was assaulting her. I think he was just trying to grab her, and then he was going to yank her, or, you know, probably handcuff her and bring her out of there.
Yep.
But from her perspective, it'll look much different.
Well, right. Her perspective and my perspective and all of our perspectives before we found out they were the good guy was that they were going to take her away and use her for experiments.
Well, and that's part of the storyline is that these are the monsters. They look like monsters, so they should be the monsters, right?
Yes.
The whole good guy versus bad thing that Mike's talking about. It's what we see sometimes
isn't shows always us a what
path. Yeah, it right. shows us well, a path of what to do that may not be the right path.
Well, I think and, even well, more than the mutant aspect of them, I think it's what she saw on that videotape, right, that made us think that they were the villains, right?
Well, no,
we didn't know the history, which was – Vol-Tec had experimented on all of them, and they overthrew the Vol-Tec people. Or
it is the mutant side too, because when they first get there, she's looking at them sidelong for that very reason, because they do all look different.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they were evil or villainous.
I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying.
I know you're not. But I think she just never seen villains before. I mean, not villains, mutants before. So
they didn't have them in her vault.
I think the story, though, is showing that what we see isn't necessarily because, you know, we see monsters sometimes where there's not.
Yes.
Right. And let's be honest, there is a trope. And I make this joke to my students every year when we're going over lab safety, you know, that, you know, they don't want to have their, like, the acid splashed in their face and they turn into a Batman villain. is that, you know, the villains, you know, you look at traditionally a lot of, like, comic booky villains or James Bond villains are often in some way deformed or disfigured.
Yes. And Bond is beautiful and attractive.
And like Bond is beautiful and attractive. Bruce Wayne and Superman and Spider-Man. They're all relatively on the good looking spectrum. And we do have a habit of judging books by their cover, right? Which is why publishers spend so much money making nice book covers. And it is a bad thing to do, and Lucy is doing it. And again, I'll say part of this is, we've mentioned in other episodes, there's biases, right? That the people in the vault believe that there's nothing up front other than monsters, and the people up top only believe the only thing in the vaults are monsters. When reality is, what you have up top and what you have down below are people.
And as above, so below.
Right. And now people can be monsters. There's no question about that. We have seen that in this show and many, many others. And you know, that's a whole other debate. And we all know, if you listen to the Dark Discussions podcast, Eric Webster's, recurring theme of, people are terrible. And, whether you agree with that or not, that is his mantra. So, wherever you have people, you're going to have bad people, because where you have people, you have all sorts of people.
Right. Whether it's because of genetics or, as I'm sure Kevin understood, and you too, Mike, being a grown up Catholic, original sin, and so on and so forth, it makes sense that people can suck. That doesn't mean everybody sucks, but once you,
right.
The more people you get together, there's a chance that you're going to get a percentage that someone's going to suck. It's just
right.
It's just odds.
And then you get the mob thing. The mob, you know, where the people go with whatever the power sway at the time is, right?
Yep.
Well, and this is why.
Yeah, because people you have the suck person that takes over.
Yeah.
Well, I said this is part of why people who are prejudiced, whether it's whatever their bias is, for whatever reason, they'll always find a reason to justify their bias, because there's, you know, unless it's a group of like three people, you can be sure you're going to find someone in that group who will justify your bias, right? Who will justify you saying that this is why these people are horrible, evil, inferior, whatever you want to use, because people are highly variable, and you'll always find someone in any group larger than a handful that will disappoint you.
Yep. Well, certainly will. Yeah, exactly. Because it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be evil. They could just disappoint you, or you just keep on butting heads over and over with them. And it's like,
yeah. Maybe you're not meant to be friends or to be even near each other.
Right.
Because exactly. That happens for sure.
Yep. And then there's the users as well. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. But all in all, especially when you're in a vault of 60 people, you know, all you need is a handful to fuck everything up. And, that's unfortunate.
Well, it's like, I think about it, like, I think I messaged you offline about this before, Phil. It's like the song from Depeche Mode, "People Are Good." We have to keep saying to yourself, to remind yourself that people are good. That stuff that they do as they're slipping up, it's not they're bad. But I have to keep reminding myself that people are good.
There are some people that just are not good.
Well, there are, but I think it's the idea, right, of like not being so cynical and nihilistic about everything.
Yeah,
right?
No, I agree with that. Right, yeah, you have to accept that there are good people as well as there are bad people.
Yeah, you got to believe that there's probably more good people than bad, or more.
Well, I would say there's people that just want.
Everybody's sinner, but more people want to try to stop sinning than want to continue sinning.
Or just want to be left alone.
Well, there's also the thing of you can meet someone the wrong day. You know, they could have had a whole bunch of bad stuff happen to them, and then you have one encounter with them, and you see them as, like, you know, terrible because of how they react to you or whatever, right? Without understanding what all the stuff that led to that moment, right? Yeah. And if you got them at a different day when things weren't going chaotic or whatever, they could be a totally different experience, right? So that's a thing as well.
Yep,
that's true.
So we'll adjust Eric's addendum, or make the addendum to Eric's thing, is people suck, but not all people suck. Some people suck.
Or simply people can suck.
At any moment, at any time.
every person is capable of great good and great evil.
Yep.
Right. You just got to catch them at the right time.
Yep.
Even with the greatest friends, sometimes you get along and sometimes you don't.
Well, we're all individuals, right? We're not all clones of each other, so.
Yeah, it would be boring if we all agreed.
I disagree with you.
Well, fuck you, then.
Whoa.
That escalated really quick.
Let's see. What else did we want to talk about in this episode?
Oh, let me see.
Well, just the journey that Coop is going through, right? In, like, this whole thing of having the world, you know, being forced to make a decision, you know, in his situation of, like, what's going on with the stuff with his wife and the company and all that kind of stuff, right? And, like, being challenged and being put into a corner of, like, where he's going to have to make a decision that, one, maybe he doesn't want to make. And then if you see, take that into account of, like, the character that we saw at the start of the season, it's, again, understanding how he got to that point, and then, like, the idea of the redemption arc for him, of finding himself again.
Yeah.
Or am I drunk?
Maybe both.
Damn it!
Yeah, no, I would concur. I mean, you know, his life was pretty good, and then everything. The moment you find out your wife is a scumbag, that pretty much can. I mean, who's your best friend? It's not like they had terrible or mediocre or an indifferent marriage. They were like best friends, and the moment you find out your wife is a cluster B fuck, I think everything, well, it will shatter. You be shattered as well.
But we didn't
get that confirmation after that, too.
We didn't get that confirmation in this episode yet, though, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm beginning to believe Williams. You know, maybe Williams is evil now in the modern day, but I'm thinking Williams is probably right. This is just an assumption, but.
Well, it sounds like Williams knew something. She knew what was going on, so she was trying to stage a protest. She's trying to, I want to say stage a protest, but try to get people to get together and essentially resist them before,
like,
something.
Like open their eyes and pull the veil down from what's going
on.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, exactly.
And she's put in a doubt into Cooper,
right.
And Cooper, for Cooper to even listen and believe it, shows you that he's thinking, yeah, she's probably,
he's
right.
Yeah, he's seen signs
say,
that he
go fuck
that,
off.
Yeah, he's seen signs that have led him to being thinking about putting that, you know, listening device in, means right. That he has some doubts.
Yeah, because if you had no doubts, you wouldn't have that. You wouldn't do it.
No, you wouldn't have even gone to that meeting, you know?
No.
Right. Exactly. You wouldn't have even gone to that meeting. Exactly.
The seeds are planted and they're growing.
And what's doing this is, again, it's the dog. And I don't want to get into this conversation again. But, like, Phil, you said yourself that it was just kind of logical, the whole dog thing. And yet he's still hung up on that he can't bring Roosevelt into the vault with it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the reason why he decided to go to the meeting. I think it's because his friend.
No, not to the meeting, but I think that's why he kind of.
Well, no, I think that was the spark. And again, I think it was way too convenient and intentional to make the audience feel that way. But in real life, most people would understand that you only have a certain amount of room in each animal.
I don't know that most people necessarily understand that. Well, not everybody's rational.
We do.
Yeah, but we're not.
No, I don't. Cooper. And I don't necessarily agree with you.
Right, I don't want to get back into
this. But I'm just saying, we did have a disagreement about that.
That's his character, and his character, right, with the dog as a semi-major character in the show, maybe, even though we haven't seen him in a few episodes. You know, he's a guy who would be like my father. He's not going in the vault if there's no dog.
Right, but that doesn't matter. Because if he doesn't go, other people will go.
That's the thing that's kind of motivating.
I have more people in my street that don't have any pets at all, dude.
I don't care, Phil. That's not what we're debating. This is him and his character. That's what this is.
I don't know why you're bringing it up again, Mike. It was just one conversation.
Because that's what he said. That's the whole reason he decided he went fishing for the earbud out of the garbage.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That was his motivation.
He was talking to the dog the whole time while he was doing it.
Right. I don't think it was just that. I think it was all his buddy as well. That brought him.
But it's
a whole bunch of stuff.
It's the dog that takes
a whole bunch of stuff.
But the thing that I think is interesting, and I don't know if anyone else has seen this, the idea that he's finding his humanity again with another dog,
right?
In his interaction,
even if he's not Roosevelt.
Before. Yeah, like it's him finding his old pieces of himself with that interaction. So I don't know if that's intended or not, or if it's just me looking at it that way, but I thought it was kind of interesting.
I think it's meant, it's part of the storyline. I mean, it's kind of him going back to his past a little bit and remembering
who he was.
Remembering who he is and who he was and why he is the way he is now. And maybe he's turning his back on how he's been for the last, who knows, 100 years?
Yeah. 200 and some years at least, right? So.
Well, no, but I mean, like, how long has he been just a dick? I don't know.
Oh, well. fair enough.
Right.
But I think it's interesting. Like, I mean, I think this is the good thing about, like, this is the writing and the storytelling in this is done well, right? That it gives you this kind of stuff to talk about and think about and ponder.
Absolutely.
On, right?
Yeah, so, and there's not necessarily one right answer here.
I know, and that's the thing, right? Is that like we're all coming from our own perspectives and experiences, right?
What are you talking about here? I'm confused.
Just like in regards to like the story for the characters, like these different characters and their different experiences and how there's depth. It isn't just like very one-dimensional. Like these people are three-dimensional people, right? These are people you could interact with in the real world, right? They're fallible. They have strengths and weaknesses. They have emotions and thoughts, right? And they're tempered by their experiences.
But isn't that in every movie or book that we read or watch?
No, not the good one. Not the bad ones.
Yeah, not the bad ones.
I wouldn't say it was in Halo.
Right.
And you can question it in the Stand miniseries, right? Those are two things that I would look at for sure.
Yeah. All right. That's fair.
Well, I think Halo had it, just not as well done. That's the thing.
But anything that's half decent, it's it.
Should. Yeah, it should. Yeah. But the thing is it's not a guarantee. And that's the – right? So it's more just to commend these people, the writers and involved in it, right?
And it's not just that. It's subtlety in telling those things. Not having to, you know, tell us,
with the hammer.
Right, showing us rather than telling us. We can see it in the people's faces, some of these things, and that's why we can disagree about them, because the show doesn't necessarily state some things outright.
It doesn't, it doesn't deal with in absolutes, right?
And that's why we have disagreements like this dog disagreement, because it's not clear cut.
What part is not clear cut about the dog? What that was the reason why he decided to go against his wife or something else?
Yeah, I mean, that's just an example. I'm just saying this is an example of how we each have our own perceptions of what is his motivating factor because the show is subtle about how it does it. It doesn't whack us with
a TV. I think it's so much. I think it's what Sean said. It's everything, because you got to remember he was already on this path after being a veteran in Alaska and what happened up there. So all that stuff is still with him. And when his buddy brings it all up, it was enough to make him, you know, question everything. So,
I don't think you can ever narrow anything down to one thing.
Yeah, it's definitely not one
thing. I mean, when we talk about stories, we talk about inciting incidents, but that doesn't mean that it is the only incident that causes a person to be where
you
they
have
are.
Flashpoints and things that happen.
My point about the dog thing was that it was the tipping point.
Right.
He's vacillating over whether or not to spy on his wife. He sets it up. He says, no, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. And then he spends time with the dog. He's like, what was with the dog thing? And he goes – fishes it out of the garbage again.
But, you know, I still would say it was the 72-hour period, not just that one.
Well, I mean, also the thing with the dog.
That's why I was saying it was a tipping point. The thing with the dog was,
I mean, one of the things with the dog wasn't just the dog, it was who made the decisions. And I think that's also part of the big tipping point for Cooper was who's making decisions. And he wanted to know. That's also what made him really start asking questions.
Ultimately, it was freedom, right? He was looking at it as a lack of freedom that people are making these choices without anybody else having input that are going to be in these societies.
Yeah, that are going to be at the behest of what's being decided. So
right.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I'm sure most people who pay to get into these vaults understand that they only have a certain amount of power. But
I don't know if you have that much money to go into a vault, I think you would expect to have power. You know what I mean?
You would create your own vault, which is what the millionaires usually do. But for a vault like this, if you wanted to go into a Vault-Tec vault, I assume there's enough rules. I mean, you read the book, what was it called? Snow Song or what was that book by McCammon?
Swan Song.
You read that too. There's a vault in that, and all these people pay to get into that vault, and you understand that, you know, the company is still the boss. So the difference here is he is quote unquote the company. At least that's what he thinks because of his wife. But
because of the work he does for them too, he kind of feels like he has a little ownership there, and he's wrong.
Right, because the company's a sociopathic monster. He's just
their puppet to make people want to buy it.
Yes, he's the friendly face.
Yep.
Right.
For what lies below.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's a fair point. So he's actually he thinks he's part of the inside, but he's not. And when his wife won't tell him anything, even though she claims it's confidential, it's not like
right.
I don't think it's not government. So it's not like uh-huh. it's top secret. So technically she could tell him if she really wanted.
Those companies look at it as top secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, some companies, you know, like me and you, Barrett, work for an insurance company, and we're not sharing stuff. But again, this is about the end, you know, death and nuclear bombs. So I if for him to ask and her to say no and be a dink about it,
it would bother me. That actually bothers me more.
Yeah, that would actually put a wedge between their marriage.
Right, exactly, that she can't tell him that stuff. And I understand there's some things that have to be secret, but she's brought him into the company. And so how much secret does she have to keep from him? And that begs the question of what are they doing? I mean,
she also seems indignant when he asks questions.
Right.
Like why are you even asking these questions? Yeah. And like, cause she, when she's like kind of mocking him in the last episode about wanting to have the ranch, you know, north of Los Angeles or whatever, right? And kind of just like very like in a mocking kind of denigrating way, she's talking to him. And it's like, but this is your partner, right? Like,
oh, and it makes me wonder how well do they really know each other?
Right.
Because she says, do you really want me, you know, just, or I think I'll be happy sitting on the farm, milking cows or whatever the thing
looking
was.
Looking pretty, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and he was perfectly fine. He was like, and again, it's, I understand it's an alternate 1950s, but he was perfectly fine with that, and he would be perfectly fine on a ranch.
It's not even that, Mike. It's when you're there, they're wealthy, like really wealthy. So they don't need, neither of them have to work.
No,
so
they don't,
at a point when he's saying, why do we want to deal with this shit? But she wants to play that rat race while he's willing to pack it up and say,
he's wanted to walk away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's walking away from it, not because, he's wealthy. even though that's part of it because he has the option to do it because he is wealthy, but he's doing it also because of his own morals, I think, which is, I don't want to be involved with this shit. So
yeah, like when he's seen it getting darker and darker, he's, I don't want to be part of this.
Right. And so for her to say whatever she wants, you know, we can look at it, and I'm sure there's some people do, and even the show could spin it that way, that this is a gender thing. I think, you know, you take away the genders, it just shows you, and you just look at two people, you know, that are sexless, and their motivations. She's a dink, and he isn't.
She's, yeah, and she's not being very nice to him. I mean, no. we see that in her demeanor.
You can have that argument, that disagreement, without the evil undertones, right? Where, yeah, you know, one person just wants to retire and go. Now, like my wife and I, Pam retired the minute she was able to retire. I'll be able to retire from teaching in about 2 years. I have no intention of doing it. She was miserable doing what she was doing. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Right. And it's just a matter of a different perspective. And now in our case, we're both fine with our individual choices. But in their case, right, his plan is to go off to a ranch somewhere long term, and her plan is to keep working for the company, and those aren't compatible. And you know, she could be working for a perfectly fine company that isn't morally corrupt or bankrupt. He
almost sounds like he wants to be a hermit. I'm sorry, he almost sounds like he wants to be a hermit. I mean,
we're kind of done with all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that much to us. Right. Yeah. Where this means something to her. And that's, again, it's a different personality and lifestyle, and different desires. Then you throw the sinister overtones on top of it is a whole other matter.
Yeah.
Right. But,
Right. It's like, it's not like you said, Mike, it's a, you know, she works for, a clothing company as an executive, and, that makes things, organically and without slave labor. You know, she works for an evil company, and she wants to work for an evil company.
Like she's bought into the culture for it, right?
Yeah. So it's not just she just wants to work because she loves her work, which she loves her work, even though it's evil. You know. So if it was like she was just working for, Joe's Plumbing, which has five offices throughout the state of New York, that's one thing, because they're not doing anything evil, and she just loves her work, and she doesn't want to go and live on a farm. So it's a lifestyle thing, like you said, yeah. Mike. But once Joe's Plumbing becomes an evil company, then, and she loves doing it still, it's like you said, you're absolutely right, Mike. The evil overtones is what is the real problem, not that she likes working and he wants to
be. Well, just the way it seems like he is continually trying to massage things where she's not concerned about it.
No, she's not thinking about compromise or anything.
Yeah, there is no compromise, right? And like he's continually compromising his side of things to try and come halfway to her, and she has no qualms about like not compromising whatsoever.
Right.
Well, I mean, she may have obviously she has a different mindset, but part of her mindset is that she is working like crazy to get a good place in the vault. And she realizes that if she starts meeting Cooper somewhere in the middle, she may compromise that spot in the vault. And
Kevin? I thought she already automatically has that vault. She has that spot in the vault.
Well, I think the apple cart could get upset if he's doing something that the company doesn't agree with.
Well, she's got the spot in the vault, but if she stops doing what she's doing, she could lose that spot in the vault.
Well, I think it's a question too of like when she's talking about the idea of.
No, I was just going to say, Sean, but no one knows that this is going to be a nuclear war. I think the whole conversation.
She seems to.
She may know, but if we sat, Sean, if you sat with your parents and started talking about this,
yeah,
it means nothing. It's just a conversation that you have, just as if you were about the San Francisco 49ers, because it means nothing. And you know, 3 weeks from now, a year, you know, 6 months from now, you know, it's going to be the same. So here, for them, this whole weirdness to happen between the two of them, it shows, like you said, Barrett, she knows more than the rest of us. And,
yeah.
And for him, but it's weird that he's really into it that much, because it's like, it's just a fake, a vault. No one's, we're not going to go to the vault. It's just a joke. But when she's so adamant that, oh, the vault's important and we have to, be, you know, this and this and this.
It has to be a managerial vault.
So this, that's another thing that makes him think, hold it. This is weird. Why is it the
good vaults?
Yeah, why is that so important? Why are there differences in vaults?
Why are we even talking about the vaults? It doesn't even, you know, it's just stupid.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's like those people that promise you freeze your body in cryogenics today, because there is, you know, the people do that. And we all know it's just a fucking waste of money. Yeah, it's just a waste of money. We all know it's a waste of money. But people do it anyway. So it's like, it's just, so he's now suspicious of something about not just her, but the company too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the fact that, like, she's pushing that it's not just, like, being in a vault. It has to be a managerial vault because they want to be having the say over what's happening, right? And then the aspect of where we talked about this before in the previous episode – about the idea that, like, if we're looking at her as, like, a narcissist or a cluster B person, she's not looking at her family like we would look at our families. She's looking at them as, like, objects and prestige aspects.
Right.
I'm just not sure we know enough to know if she's like that or not.
But right. I'm going on the assumption. So, and, like, based on some of the things that I've seen or whatever, right? So I'm just saying this is my perspective.
We got to remember, Barrett. Sean has already binged the entire series, so he already knows these things.
I'm not rooting anything, though. Like, but just the idea that, like, there's stuff that's questioned, right? And so if you're looking at those aspects, and then you're looking in the way that, like, those aspects could play with the character as it's being presented, then those are things to consider, right? That, like, if she's not just a normal person who just happens to work for an evil corporation, right? You know, there's a different way of looking at things, right? And I just, her combativeness and her unwillingness to be compromising or consider things. And, like, you can disagree on stuff, but you don't have to be insulting about it, right? Like, you're supposed to be partners, right? However you want to look at it, right? Whether it's family, friends, or whatever, like, but the idea that you would be disagreeing and you're doing it in a way that is, like, targeting the person you're supposed to care about.
Fuck that. If you don't agree with me, I'm going to fucking destroy you.
Barrett. But you get what I'm saying, though. It's just like, so there's that aspect of, like, looking at things and, like, I'm sure we've all encountered people in our real lives, right, who don't think or see the world as we do, right? Or what you would expect as, like, a baseline for looking at the world, right?
I don't think any of us see the world the same. So, yeah.
I see it correctly, right. And the rest of you are fucked up.
Right.
But no, but I know exactly what you're saying, Sean. You're talking about not normal people looking at the world differently, but a Costa B person looking at the world differently that we meet every day in our lives. That is,
not everybody has to be cluster B because they see things differently than you do.
You didn't hear what I just said, Mike. I said not normal people that see things differently than you.
Oh, okay.
But cluster, so you just missed what I said. But no problem. But when you meet the cluster B people, in other words, it's like, you know, when you're talking about
serial killers.
The rabbit that ran across the street and got run over. And most people are like, oh, gee, that's horrible. Or, well, another person may say, oh, that's horrible, but that's a good rabbit I can use for a stew. And then you got and that's like 25 people that say one or the other. And then the 26th person says, that was hilarious. I want to see that again.
Like, let me get video of that. Let's watch it over and over again, right?
Yeah,
like,
and that's what you're talking about, Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the person who doesn't see the world in
everyone else is like a different person. We can have disagreements and but you have a value and care about the person. It's someone who doesn't have that attachment, doesn't have that understanding, and basically like looks at you like everyone else is a toaster. What is the toaster going to do for me today?
Right.
And if the toaster's not working for me, I don't need you.
Right. Like, yes, exactly. Yes.
Better make me fucking toast.
You better make the toast.
Right. Yeah, right. If you're a toaster to a person and they like you because of that, and the moment you decide not to be a toaster for them anymore.
Well, and again, when you're looking at a toaster, you don't care how the toaster feels. You don't care if the toaster's tired. You don't care if the toaster's sick. You don't care about any of that. All you want is the toaster to do what you want it to do.
Is this a Cylon metaphor?
It wasn't, but I guess you could go that way.
Right. Now that's a really good analogy of what the point you're trying to get through, Sean.
And so that's where I have, again, I'm just saying from my perspective of watching this that I have a feeling she's in that category. And if I'm wrong, then, you know, we can talk about it next episode or whatever.
Yeah, I don't feel that so much. I just think she's very focused on the vaults and saving her family to the exclusion of hearing what they have to say.
Yeah, well, that's fair too.
Right. But she definitely must know something, because why?
She definitely does.
It's so important for her to make sure about this vault, except for money. If it's not the bottom line to make money, but it's something else, then that's nefarious.
Well, and that's why I can't make a decision about her until I know those things.
Right. Well, you know, though, Barrett, I know you're saying that, but you probably already know that she's evil. I mean, it's so obvious that she's gonna be the villain. It's just blatantly obvious. It's we already know Vault-Tec's an evil company. If you played the games, you know, if we about the experiments and all this other stuff. So we know she must be evil, because if she's that high up, she has to know about this shit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's the idea too of like having, like, you know how I was mentioning about like the vaults being a cult. Well, it's like the cabal or whatever, the top echelon of Vault-Tec is like a cult. In a way, if you look, like, because she's so bought into it, like, she's not considering anything else, right?
Yeah.
Well, and if you already know that there's going to be a nuclear bomb that's going to go off, and you know how important the vaults are, you might become that fixated and one-minded about saving your family. But that doesn't necessarily make her a good person. I mean, yeah, I don't think she's good from what we're seeing right now. But I just don't know enough to be sure of that yet.
But I understand, you know, and I'll call that, you know, I'm just putting words out there that's a devil's argument, because that, you know, that's fair, because we don't know, but we kind of know. I mean, it's like O.J. Simpson. We know he's not guilty, but we know.
Well, we know here more because it's a story, and we know that how stories like this play out, right?
Yeah,
He's not eavesdropping. He's not being given a moral dilemma about eavesdropping on his wife, only to find out that she's really a good and kind-hearted person.
Plus, she works for a company we know is evil, and she's one of the biggest executives there.
Right.
So, continuing.
But I'm saying in real life, I think. And by the way, I'm pretty sure there was some confidence that there was nothing good going on level 12 last week. So,
yep. which
you never know.
And honestly, to be honest, there was nothing good that was going on level 12. It was clean. It was cleanup. It was honestly cleanup, trying to give the best possible lives to these ruined souls. So it wasn't
right. Something bad had happened on level 12.
Yeah.
But that wasn't where we were now.
Yeah. All right. I'll go for that. Yeah. I'll go for that there. Yeah.
Right. Those people.
But again, they were trying to trick us. That was a blatant trick by the screenwriters more than anything.
And they could be trying to do the same thing here. You never know. So I certainly am willing to.
Well,
you say that yes, the odds are very good. The thumb is definitely on the scale of her being morally compromised. Let's just put it that way, right? There's no question about that. That doesn't mean that that's not the writers laying down red herrings and trying to lead us astray.
Right.
I can appreciate intellectually opening, like leaving open those possibilities.
Right. All right. I can't, but.
You know, I mean, weren't you the one that thought the Night King was being misunderstood?
I never watched The Lion King. I've never seen the film.
The Night King.
Oh, the Night King was misunderstood? You're damn right he was.
Oh, there we go. See,
that's. Damn right. Absolutely.
Cersei was misunderstood too, right?
Well, because the Night King was no, Cersei's was not misunderstood. She was just getting vengeance over all the motherfuckers that she deserved to take vengeance on. But the Night King was his own entity that we never learned enough about to know whether or not he was evil or not. So I'll say he's misunderstood. Yes. Because again, he wasn't human, so therefore, he was this
defense rest.
Menacing threat. What's that, Mike?
I said the defense rests.
Yeah, well, it's not like the Night King wasn't like Mordor. I don't consider it like Mordor. I mean, the Night King was just a group of people that lived on the other side of the wall that
were undead.
That were
and turned babies into frozen zombie creatures.
Yeah,
which the elves did to them. So there you go. So, elves. Well, yeah, the original.
Remember, it was the elves that were created the first one, right? When they stabbed the first man.
That's right. The ones that were with the stone. The door, the people that they met when they said, "Hold the door! Yeah. Hold the door!"
Was it the children of the forest? Right, I think it's what the name was.
Children of the forest. That's them. Yeah, the elves. Whatever.
But then, why would they kill all the humans?
Well, because the reason was because the humans were coming into the forest and destroying the forest. So their answer was they couldn't fight the humans off. So they created the Night King and his group to be their weapon, except that, like we talked about before, he got out of their control.
Yeah.
And it became like was coming for everything.
That's right. Yeah. They rebelled against the.
Well, they were just trying to say to use him as a weapon to stop the humans. He then became a human or a weapon to stop all of them.
Right. Yeah. Because he became sentient and said,
That doesn't make his motives unknown. I mean, he wants to destroy everything. Wouldn't that make him bad?
He wasn't going to destroy everything. What he was going to do was remove all humans. And
bringing balance to the force. Everyone's undead.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. He was going to create more of nightmares.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like when they threw Brandon off the...
Barrett, I don't think you're not going to win the argument here. We'll just,
I'm not trying to win.
The jury will decide. I think you can rest.
I'm trying to pull it out.
Points have been made.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it out so people can listen to it. I think anyone that wants to destroy any world is awesome. So I'm good with that. So I'm just arguing for it.
Well, I don't know if they would want to destroy a world. What they were doing was they were an army that was trying to take over. They just happened to be the others, or Nightwalkers, as they call or whatever they called them. And
the others are evil. We know that.
They were trying to kill all people.
We don't know if they were – yeah, because they considered people the enemy.
And to the people, that's destroying the world.
Right.
If they don't exist, there's no world, right?
If you look at the people perspective, absolutely. That's my point, is that we don't know the Nightwalker's perspective.
We know they want to destroy all the people. Right?
Well, because they were banished to the other side of the wall. But again, this is a different show, so it doesn't matter. So back to this show here. What do we want to go to? Anything else on anybody's list?
Yes. I really liked the end when he walks – now I can't think of his name, the brother – walks into the other vault and all we get is this sound of machinery and the look on his face. It was a great end.
I mean, even going in there in the first place, it was pretty clever because somehow he managed to get in touch with 33.
Yeah, he's a good hacker.
And they said, you know, and he says, so he makes them think that, you know, it's, you know, the head of 31, and he said, well, you better come back if you're being discovered.
But they have cameras, so they know it wouldn't be her, so I don't get why he would boldly walk in there. That kind of, I thought he was crazy.
Well, he managed to get in. I mean, first he knocks, and then they let him in. And
yeah.
So someone wasn't watching the cameras.
Or they're going to kill him.
Well, I wonder if they even have anybody that watches the game. It's a weird
system. Yeah, I don't know.
There isn't a human that watches it. And there obviously is no alarm that goes beep, beep, beep when you know, there's a movement in the camera. So I don't get it. Yeah. It's convenience, I think. That's all I can think of. Yeah. Because you would think that, you know, I mean, people have cameras or little things all over the place that will beep. It's even if a deer walks through your yard. So, I mean, for them to not have that stuff there, it's kind of a plot convenient, I think. Convenience, I think.
But I like the end. I liked how it left it. And we have another big mystery.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be curious. So obviously we're going to learn a lot about Vault. Is it 31 or 33? I forget which number.
31.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So we're going to learn a bunch about it probably next week. I can assume that.
And where are we going to be left? Because they already know they already knew they were getting a second season. I don't know if they knew that before they finished. I don't know that, but you know, what kind of
well, they had taken steps that get. They were assuming they were getting a second season. So,
oh yeah, this one already has been announced. The second season,
yeah, because it's already announced. But
yeah.
But before it was, they talked about they were trying to get permits to shoot in California for the second season that had not been confirmed.
Yeah,
and then it came out later that they actually did get the full green light for it.
Yeah, well, California's becoming a wasteland already, so hey, why not?
That's funny. I like that. Well, at least the cities are, anyway.
No, everything is. They have the mudslides, they have the rain, they have everything.
Yeah.
Don't forget the wildfires.
Their government.
Unless that's too sensitive for John.
The government is horrible, too. But most governments are horrible, so it is what it is. So this is already locked in for a second season. So, but I can't believe they would have cliffhangers, but you know, Black Summer was a damn good show and they had cliffhangers and then they got canceled. So, and same with Mindhunter, you know, so it happens. But again, this is Amazon, so it's a little different.
Aren't they coming back with the third season now of Mindhunter? I thought I heard that.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
Oh, are they? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I think it may be, I don't think it's with Netflix. I think it's somewhere else. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I forget. But either way, I'm assuming, this is just a guess, that we'll learn about Vault 31 next week, and we'll learn about the true nature of Cooper's wife next week. This is just a guess. Because
I think it's a good guess. I would imagine those are some of the mysteries they need to clear up.
Yeah.
And so far they seem good at like presenting stuff and giving you resolution, or at least giving you the idea that there's resolution, right?
Yeah, we're going to get some sort of resolution for the three main characters, I think. You know, it's not going to be a final resolution, but it's going to resolve some of their issues that they've been having all season.
Right. Yeah, so next season, if we don't see the super mutants or Mike, what's that monster that you never want to fight?
Is it Deathstalker?
Yeah, no, the Deathclaw. Deathclaw. Yeah. Yeah. So if you don't see the Deathclaw or the super mutants in next episode, I'm sure we'll probably see them in season two. We got to see those.
Yeah. Right now, the big monster has been the Gulper, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They are a pain in the ass in Fallout 4, the Gulpers. Because they shoot out this acid, too. It They didn't have that in
this. I definitely wouldn't want to fight them.
Yeah, and this show, they seem pretty easy to kill or fight because in Fallout 4, they're a pain in the ass. But the reason they're a pain in the ass is because by the time you get to Far Harbor, which is Bar Harbor, Maine, you're higher level. And so the monsters are a little harder. And so when you get there, it's like they're pretty tough. Especially when you get like six or seven at the same time. Bastards.
Yeah, they've only gotten one at a time in this, right?
Yeah. And this one didn't shoot no acid. So,
right.
I'll say the – if I have a because, you know, I'm a monster guy. Any disappointment in the show – it's that we haven't gotten a bit more variety of creatures. I understand that those are expensive to do, but really we just got the gulper and the rad roaches. No Snethclaw, no super mutant. Oh, actually the bear. There was
the bear.
Yeah. Mutant bear.
Yeah. They're called, they become a Y in the game. Let's see. What do we call the bears in Fallout 4? Question.
Fucking terrifying.
They are. All bears are terrifying. Yao Guai. Don't ask me where they get that name.
Speaking of bears.
Why do they call them Yao Guai? Yeah, continue, Mike.
This was an issue, if I remember correctly, that we left unresolved.
It comes from the Chinese word... Yao Guo, two words, which means strange monster.
I was right. Fair? It was Asian.
Yeah. All right. I used to think.
Nothing mistaken for a Mogwai.
I used to think Yingling Bear was Asian too, but all it was a converted German name anglicized. Yeah. It's just not Chinese. But anyway, what did you say, Mike? You were saying something?
So I think this was left as a question back in episode 2 or 3, which is did Maximus actually kill Titus or just let him die? And I think they answered that question.
Oh yeah, they answered it. Yeah,
they definitely did. Yeah,
yeah. So, so that was good. And again, here's Titus saying Maximus rather saying that he's not the hero while he's doing a sacrifice.
Right.
And, so and that was an open question for me at the beginning of the series. Which is he going to be like an antagonist in the series or a protagonist, which way he's going? And they have definitely pushed him in the protagonist direction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he feels guilt over what he did. So we know that he's...
Well, and she explains to him that you're not a bad person and she chopped off a head and all sorts of stuff. You know, she threw acid at someone's face. So we've all done terrible things, and not because we're evil, but because of mistakes or
circumstances,
circumstances and whatever. And then they became boyfriend, girlfriend and stuff. So, he's a good guy. I have no doubt that he's not a malevolent individual by any means. That doesn't mean he may not turn into a malevolent person. That we've seen.
Or that he might do things that might be morally questionable. I mean, in this world, sometimes that's what you need to do to survive. So,
I always thought was funny because when I was a little kid and I tried to get my father to play Dungeons and Dragons with me, and every time that he would walk into a room, his character, I say, all right, the monsters attack, come up to you with their swords out or something. And he goes, he says, oh, okay, I'll just say, hello, how are you? Are we friends? I am your friend. And then I say, okay, they attack. And then, this would just go over and over. and my father would just have to fight because of self-defense. But the point is even in Dungeons and Dragons, you're just killing everybody, even if you're an awful good character. So, yeah, I mean, it's – But the point is an analogy I guess I'm trying to get at is that they've done some bad things and may do some bad things in the future, but they're going to be protagonists in the most.
Primarily, they're going from a good place, people. Right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to doing it from all like selfish or whatever reasons, right? Like they're trying to do good. that sometimes doesn't always, you know, have a good path.
Well, plus, why would anybody watch the show if there wasn't violence in it, right? I mean, right. That's the point of all genre is violence. So it just is. It's a fact.
Part of storytelling.
Conflict at the least. There's got to be conflict of some sort. Otherwise, you're telling a boring story.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a romance or a drama. This is speculative fiction stuff, and that's all usually good and evil and violence and mayhem and anarchy and so on. So, yeah.
But even, you know, if you compare to Game of Thrones, like Game of Thrones, people are out for themselves. This, I get a little more,
it's
I don't know.
More balanced.
It's more balanced. There's more goodness in the good people. Then there is darkness from what I can tell. And I would be okay hanging out with Maximus and Lucy. I wouldn't think that they were going to backstab me immediately. You know what I mean? It's like in Game of Thrones, pretty much everybody is calculating their own political position and you could be the sacrifice at any moment.
Yeah, and they're all evil.
Yeah.
Because if anybody who wants to – I mean, you know, as a little kid, I remember I was like, gee, that would be cool to be in the government or a senator or something. And now it's like, I don't think I would ever want to because I don't want to have my soul be tainted because you just do too many terrible things. And it's not even because you're evil because you do terrible things. It's because you have to make a decision. All right. Should we drop bombs on this country here? Or should we give all aid to this country here? And, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, and that's things I couldn't do either. That's why I wouldn't want to be in that position.
Can we do both?
What's that? Oh.
Can we do both?
Or should we do both? You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions there that I would have, and I probably wouldn't get anything done.
but I think I know Mike's joke there, but I won't talk about it. But yeah, it's a, yeah, it's just a terrible thing. Terrible. So yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I just always love talking about that Melrose Place thing, analogy I always bring up, which is they have this doctor, and I forget the character's name, that was trying to kill someone in the show, but he was a good looking guy and he became a fan favorite. So they turned him into a good guy and it's like they pretended none of the attempted.
And that would destroy the show for me because it would pull me out of it at that point. You know what I mean? Because it's not being true to itself at that point.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, soap opera crap. And the character was pretty awesome. But yeah, it was made no sense and you almost laugh. Yeah.
It'd be like at the, you know, if Sauron became the good guy.
Wasn't he the good guy?
this is a thing. It's like, you know, like the character Venom just proved to be too popular to leave as a villain, so they turned him into an
enemy. So then he becomes the anti.
Well, same with that X-Men, the woman that January Jones played.
The White Queen.
Yeah, exactly. What's her character's name?
Emma Frost.
They turned
she
in.
She is not good in the comics. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, no, even in the comics, she becomes good eventually, too.
Yeah, oh, she does get reformed for a period and then goes back, because that's what you get to do.
Because she became a popular character in the comic, too. Even Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn have become good guys in the latest editions of the comics. Yeah. You know, Poison Ivy is her comic's huge, and she's kind of like an anti-hero like Harley Quinn now, so it's kind of funny.
When you look at even like a character like the Punisher, right, who if you look at it, his basis is like super violent, but still, like you're like, if you took off like the Punisher thing or whatever, he's a murderer.
Right.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, and even though Cersei's was a murderer, she was really the hero of the show.
Oh, God.
Absolutely. I'm going with it. Either way, her character was the best. And it was funny, too, because I hated her character the first, like, three seasons. And then suddenly I was like, oh, my God, this character's the best character ever. when she decided to start getting vengeance, I was like, okay, I'm on board. Yeah, let's do it.
That's all she had left.
Yeah. Oh yeah. After that little bird thing, that's when just take them all out. She had a right to kill them all. So I was on board.
Yeah. And we just know that the Night King only wanted to have a warm place to be.
Yeah.
Jerk it's people.
If
you
want to die, it shouldn't be winter.
That's right. He got screwed.
He got screwed.
He really did. Those stupid children of the forest.
Just fake news. They saying he was bad.
Right.
I mean, look at how stupid they were. They put siege machines outside of the building. So they deserve to die. Dumbasses.
And sent the cavalry into a dark...
Darkness, yes. Straight on at the enemy. Yeah, that's good. My God.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
That was the worst tactics ever.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That battle was awesome.
The stupidest battle ever.
It was so anticlimactic. I was like, oh, give me a break.
Well, it was just dumb. You're like, I could have... had a better battle than that if I was in charge.
Well, I don't even mean that. I just
you don't want your viewers saying that, though.
I just mean the end of the Night King. It was like, oh my God, this huge storyline, and it ends like that. It was like stupid.
Yeah.
It was like ridiculous.
Like at some point, I almost wish they'd done this. Like they did the thing they did with like Blackwater Bay fight, just knock someone out, and just battle's done. Yes.
Yeah, that was funny. They did that, yeah. Anyway, all right. So I think we can probably wrap up this episode here because we're now off topic. So I was going to give my final thoughts on the episode. We've recorded about 2 hours, so house cleaning can be very minimal. So Sean, your final thoughts on the episode of the radio?
Another great episode, as I say, 7 for 7 so far. Absolutely love everything to do with the storyline, storytelling, the cast, everything. Just so good.
Indeed. And for me, it was a great episode. And again, it's making me – I remember at the beginning I hated Maximus's character because I thought, like Mike said, they were going to turn him into some scumbag evil or a good anti-hero or something stupid like that. But no, they've made him a lawful good paladin, so I'm on board. I like it. And so, yeah, that made me very happy in this episode. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, it was a really solid episode. It feels like it's bringing us to a satisfying conclusion. You end with Maximus going to deal with the knights. You have Goosey going off to get her father, and you literally end with Norm entering into Vault 31. And it's a big world. I'm sure there will be more stories in the second season, but it feels like we're going to get a resolution to most of our questions in that next episode.
Barrett?
Yeah, great episode. Looking forward to the finale. Everybody's pretty much said everything that I agree with.
Let's.
Good episode. Look forward to doing next week.
All right. Sounds good. Just a quick housekeeping would be subscribe to Dark Discussions podcast, wherever podcasts are found, so you can hear us on our other episodes. We just released an episode on the movie The First Omen today, so you can hear us weekly. Reviewing a different genre film, among other podcasts as well. Also, check out the website, darkdiscussions.com, and email us at darkdiscussions@AOL.com. And join the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and share our episode everywhere and anywhere you have a social media account to let people know about us and tell them that, oh, this is a pretty good podcast. You check us out. And then last thing is reviews. Leave reviews on Apple Podcasts, wherever. It's always appreciated. And next week we're going to be discussing episode called, which is the finale, and that's going to be called The Beginning. So the finale is actually called The Beginning, and we'll talk about that next week. We're going to record that on Tuesday.
That's neat. Isn't the first episode called The End?
Yes.
Yes.
That's awesome. I like that. Yes.
So Tuesday, June 4th is where we're going to record it, and we should have it out June 6th. So look for that. But before you do, we do have a new episode out of Dark Discussions podcast about the movie The First Omen, among other films reviewed that we've done weekly prior to that. So that's our wrap up. So with all that stated, Barrett, why don't you lead us?
Thanks again for joining us on the Fallout show, and listen to us next week when we go over the finale episode.
I know that I've lived a relatively comfortable life.
Stop! Mercy!
You need to go home. Vault dwellers are an endangered species.
I do not think you would be willing to do what it takes to survive up here.
If you insist on staying, then you will have to adapt.
I don't want to see tomorrow.
Tomorrow, so they say, will be a lovely day. A bright new sun will suddenly break through. But I don't want to see tomorrow unless I see it with you.
And grabbed a moldy one.